This is the Morgan Report with David Morgan. For the latest in precious metals investing, gold, silver, the economy, and more, go to themorganreport.com.
I'm Greg Hunter. Welcome to USAWatchdog.com, where there's a guest we haven't had on in a while. I've been thinking about him a lot because the price of silver has been way down, and he is the silver guru. He's way more than that. He's a smart guy. He flies all over the world to give talks and conferences. He's the author of two books, one of my favorite right here. This is the Silver Manifesto. It is an amazing book on how important silver is in the monetary system, how important it is for industrial uses, and just why you need it, and the history of silver. And then we have this book that came out just not long ago, Second Chance. It was maybe a year or 2 years ago, a few years ago. And it talks about the second chance of getting precious metals. And even the big guys are talking about getting precious metals, even though everybody hates gold and silver. And so I have on the one and only David Morgan of the Morgan Report. David Morgan, thanks for joining us today on USAWatchdog.com.
Well, Greg, it's great to be back. Thank you.
I want to start with the what I was thinking about is that, and you know all about this kind of stuff, and everybody knows the markets are suppressed, and my goodness, we found out in the last few years, criminally suppressed. I mean, they're paying fines, they're going to jail, they're being perp walked. I mean, it's pretty unbelievable. It's primary dealers of banks. I mean, there's not a market anywhere, especially in silver and in gold. How long can this suppression game keep going? Where are we? It looks like gold in the 1300s is doing better than silver at mining cost, apparently. Let's talk about how long can the suppression game keep going, and is it going to break open sometime soon?
Well, as a essay answer, I mean, it's going to go on until it ends. No one knows exactly, but the physical market can and will take over at some point. And we've already seen inklings of that a couple of times in the current bull market, which I think started in 2003. And silver at one time during the heydays was like the best investment class you could make. And people forget that. They also forget that, you know, gold had 11 years in a row where the yearly change was higher than the previous year. So there was an 11-year bull market in gold, I think 9 or 10 in silver. And then, of course, silver peaked about May 1st, 2011, and gold peaked September that same year. And since that time, less and less interest in the metals has taken hold. And then the cryptocurrency started, and Bitcoin started in 2009, didn't really catch a lot of traction until a few years later. And so a lot has happened in the marketplace overall. But the physical market is what will take control at some point in the after the crisis of 2008, when both gold and silver were hammered, just like the rest of the market, the first to recover were the precious metals. And at the bottom, many savvy investors were buying silver and couldn't buy it at the retail level without paying a huge premium. So that was a very strong indication that the supply was extremely tight and people were willing to pay like a 30% premium for physical silver.
Are we there now? Is silver the most hated investment there is? And is that kind of a counterintuitive a marker that if everybody hates it, that's the bottom? I mean, we're at 16 and change. I mean, I think you were telling me in the pre-interview, mining cost is about where we are now with silver. That would make it a very low risk investment, would it not?
Correct. It's very low risk. There is obviously some downside, possibly, but anytime you buy any commodity at the cost of production or lower, and have some patience, you're gonna make out in the longer term. As far as is it the most hated? I would say sentiment is very low. Certainly there are people that bought, you know, at the 30 and 25 level, maybe even 20, and it's sitting in the 16 area, really, you know, are very, very upset. A lot of those people have given up and sold their silver at a loss and moved into cryptocurrencies and, you know, made back all their silver losses and then some. So there's a fair amount of folks that have done that. And again, you know, it's that market that just hasn't moved for a very long time. It's either sideways or down. But I want to be clear here. Silver, as far as the market is concerned, and you know, my looking at the market, or anyone objectively looking at the market, bottomed in December 2015. And yes, we have gone up and down and up and down like all markets, but the overall lows have been higher lows, which is the definition of an uptrend. So silver and gold basically have started a subtle uptrend from the bottom in 2015, but it's certainly been slow, tedious, back and forth, and wearing people out. I coined a phrase that, you know, silver either scare you out or wear you out. And we're in the wear you out phase. A lot of people that were believers at one time become non-believers. Market's worn them out. They moved on to something else.
Do you think that if we get into a situation where, they're talking about the end of the bond bull, and we're talking I've heard a talk from some of the big investors. Jim Grant says that we're going to be up in for some real big problems with the bond market. Now, other people are worried about the bond market as well, that rates can't go much lower, although they may surprise everybody. But we're pretty much at the low on the rates, and when rates go up, that's when all hell breaks loose. What are your thoughts?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you look at the Silver Manifesto, we took a whole chapter on the debt bomb. In fact, we talked about that a couple of years ago. And that is the key, the most important market of all. Really, the most important commodity is oil, but the most important financial asset is the U.S. Treasury market, be it the T-bill, the T-bond, the T-note, 10-year, 30-year, or even a Treasury bill. And this is key. And what's so really unbelievable is, if you really think about it, the one asset class that's supposed to be the safest is the U.S. Treasury market, and it's the unsafest. And something that's supposed to be very unsafe, like silver or gold, are the safest. I mean, the Treasury market has not got several thousand-year history of being money. And all fiat currencies have failed in the long run. And the market's failing. I mean, the U.S. Federal Reserve and government policies have devalued the dollar about 98% since 1913. So a little over 100 years, you've lost 98% of your money. And their mandate is to have a steady monetary policy. In other words, to protect the purchasing power of the dollar. Well, they've failed miserably. And the bond market reflects that. The only reason that bonds have been such a great investment for 35 years is that interest rates have gone down, which means bond prices have gone up.
I have the saying about Donald Trump, who I like. Having Hillary Clinton as president would have been a disaster. I mean, she sat on the air with Chris Wallace, and said there are limits to the Second Amendment and limits to the First. And as a journalist, no, you didn't. So I love Trump way better than Hillary Clinton being president. But my criticism is basically a double-edged sword, and that is the bad news is he's going to be successful. The good news is he's going to be successful. So, I mean, is that where we are with, instead of having some horrible thing that happens, maybe we have some outrageously good news in interest rates spike? I mean, what do you think about that scenario with Donald Trump? I haven't had your own since his election. So tell me about what you think about what could happen with Donald Trump and moving the markets.
Well, a very tough question. I would think that if the deep state gets pushed in the corner much further, that they can basically pull the plug, which means they could, you know, the stock market could come tumbling down, and then they could blame the Trump administration. You know, I think one of his mistakes at the State of the Union address was one of the first things he talked about right off the bat was that, you know, look at how good the stock market's doing, and basically took credit for it. Whereas during the campaign, he talked about everything's in a bubble. Presidents really have very little to do with the economic policy, believe it or not, but everybody's been brainwashed to think that they do. So I think it would have been much better to serve him and the facts if he would have maybe mentioned the stock market at an all-time high, maybe not mentioned the bubble, but just basically, you know, policies that are enacted at the federal level really don't control the economy. They can affect it, yes, but they don't really control it.
So you think that there's a possibility that if this war continues, I mean, you just put Mike Pompeo in as the Secretary of State, and this must have been brewing for a long time, because boom, he put him in, and boom, he had a replacement, a female, actually, a first female CIA director. You're saying that if this heats up too much, that, you know, they're the deep state, who a lot of people could go to jail because they've committed treason and fraud. And you've seen all the other stuff going on, the Hillary Clinton global charity fraud, and everybody knew about it. And then the cover up and trying to frame Trump. I digress. But you're saying that this, I mean, this is unprecedented in American history. And you're saying that if this keeps going on too nasty, that the deep state, they're going to do something. And what their something is to just crash the economy.
Yeah, as a metaphor, I mean, you know, if you're losing the chess game, you just stand up and turn the whole table over, and, you know, the board, the chess board, and all the pieces go flying everywhere. I mean, that's a metaphor for a war. It's a metaphor for crashing the stock market. It's a metaphor for crashing the bond market. It's a metaphor for it happening on its own. So, you know, I'm concerned that, you know, as you said, if you win, you lose. I mean, and so this is why I think the unraveling is being done extremely carefully. Your previous guest, one or two before me, was the ex-CIA guy. I forget his name, if you can help me there.
Ship. His name is Kevin Ship.
Yeah. And, you know, he made some excellent points and far more attuned with the deep state than me, although I can make some comments. But
he didn't talk about them blowing it up, though. You're talking about they, and you know what? It could be blown up. This is a sad thing. The sad thing is what you're talking about could happen because $20 trillion in debt and this crazy suppression game of gold and silver. They're suppressing interest rates. I mean, they're manipulating. There's not a market out there that's not manipulated. Yeah. So what you're saying could happen.
Well, it's a possibility. I wouldn't rule it out. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm saying it could happen. I mean, these people are so used to winning a rigged game. If they start being caught at rigging, which they have been, then they're going to do things that are not necessarily predictable. They're not going to act in a rational manner. And they're going to do anything possible to protect themselves from, you know, going to jail or whatever. And so you cannot rule out the possibility that, again, as a metaphor, they turn the table over and that's it.
And that brings us to gold and silver and why that you should have it. Whether you're trying to make a ton of money on it or not isn't the thing that people should be looking at. The thing people should be looking at is that could be the only thing you're left with if all these, you know, your brokerage may go out of business. I mean, MF Global, hello, primary dealer of treasuries, that went out of business. Poof. Buy all your great investments, gone, hypothecated, rehypothecated, whatever. So you, one of the things that you talk about in the Morgan Report is saying that you really need to have direct control of some of your assets. Let's talk about that.
Well, I've always maintained a hedge position. I mean, people get upset with me because, you know, they put, you know, 90% of their wealth into silver or, you know, some extreme amount. And that's not what I teach or have ever taught. I mean, one of the first articles I ever did was the 10 Rules of Silver Investing that I gave to the public as like a public service years ago. And I said, you know, 10% is probably enough for most people. And then I changed it during a speaking engagement in San Francisco, probably, I don't know, 15 years ago, and said 20% maximum. And that's it. So that leaves you 80% to do other asset classes. So that's number one. And the reason that you do that is what you just said, Greg, just to repeat back, is that it's a situation where when all else fails, there's silver. In fact, I talk about that in the first rule of silver investing. So if you're unfamiliar with my work, just Google David Morgan, 10 Rules of Silver Investing, have a look. Those apply to most investments, not just the silver market, but it's really keys in on the silver market and why it's a unique asset class and why you don't have to overload to be protected.
You think that we're in a bull market in gold, and you think higher prices, I mean, you think we're going to reignite the bull market in gold. I mean, gold has moved some. It's up 13 something and change. It's kind of weird. It's gone up more than silver. Usually they go up in tandem and they go down in tandem. But anyway, but you're thinking that we're in a new bull market in gold, and you think that oil prices could go higher as well. Let's talk about that.
Well, the most important commodity in the world is oil. And what's interesting, if you look at it from a silver perspective, because silver and oil are highly correlated. Most people don't know this, but it takes 3 or 4 ounces of silver at current prices to purchase a barrel of crude oil. And that's been a little changed over the last 35 years. So people talk about, you know, the volatility of silver and blah, blah, blah. In terms of currency, this is a fact. This is true. But in terms of purchasing something that's the most vital commodity on the planet, at least currently, which is oil, it really hasn't changed that much. So silver and oil are highly correlated. And again, to repeat, the 3 to 4 ounces of silver buys a barrel of oil, and that's little change over 35 years.
And so you think that that silver and oil will go up in tandem when they start moving?
I do.
You know, you sent me an article in the pre-interview about counterfeiting. And, you know, right now, I mean, even the article says it's not a big problem, but it's a problem. It's been going on for a while. And they're counterfeiting silver, which is unbelievable. They're counterfeiting silver eagles. And if the price does move, and I think it will in the future, that's what Cliff High, as many other people say. Greg Mannarino says it's the most undervalued investment on the planet, that everybody should be buying it. It's the hard asset Bitcoin. That it's going to go up because it's so far down. And what about the counterfeiting? Could that get worse? And how do you protect yourself from that? Could that get worse if the price goes up? And how do you protect yourself?
Well, to give you a little bit of history, during the big bull market of the late 70s into early 1980, Engelhard bars were drilled and filled. The 100-ounce bars were drilled out and filled with lead and then capped off with silver, and they were done in a way that was very difficult to detect by just visual inspection. So there were a fair amount of those, and that was right near the top. You know, once silver started to accelerate, some criminal types decided to, you know, how to make a fast buck, and of course that was done. In those days, there weren't that many counterfeits in the coin realm, to my knowledge. But more recently, as you said, there have been counterfeit gold and silver coins, and they're not that pervasive. In other words, I don't want to get everyone upset that's bought, you know, silver coins or gold coins to be panicking that they have counterfeits. Number one, you really want to buy from a reputable dealer. Number two, you're really taking a more of a chance if you're buying off of an eBay type of a situation than if you're buying from, you know, a reputable dealer. It does happen. It's out there. There are pretty easy measures. In fact, you know, now that we're doing this interview, maybe what I'll do is write a public domain article on, there's a couple of ways to buy a device that is, you know, can be put in your pocket. And it's pretty good at scaling different gold coins and silver coins to determine, you know, fairly easily whether or not they're counterfeit or not. It's something, it's a concern, but not something to be overly concerned. But I want to drill down that a little bit further.
Well, there was a recent article that you sent me about a congressman who was upset that they're counterfeiting coins and that they're he's talking to the men about it. I mean, so this is a recent article. This is a recent concern.
It is. And again, to go a little deeper down the rabbit hole. So let's think like a criminal. So if you're going to, what would you do if you were going to counterfeit a coin to make the most money possible? Well, you wouldn't counterfeit an American eagle. You would counterfeit a rare coin, because a rare coin not only has a gold content or a silver content, but it has value because it's rare. So this is an area that very few people are even willing to address. But this is where you would take a would counterfeit something that has a very, very low mintage that's coveted by the collector world, the numismatic world, and you would counterfeit that. And that's where you could make like a 1 ounce gold coin and use real gold, for example. Who cares? You made a coin that's a blank by blank year, and it, you know, sells for between $13,000 and $18,000 an ounce, right? So you got to be a little careful. I know the NUMMI guys are going to beat me up and be upset, but it does happen. And again, just, you know, think logically about the proposal. If you were going to counterfeit something, would you counterfeit something that you've got to put $400 worth of metal into to get $1,300, and then you've got to pay for, you know, however it gets done and all that? Would you take the risk? Or would you rather take that risk and make $18,000 or $180,000?
Yeah, maybe the counterfeiters are getting ready for a big explosion in silver because, you know, they're counterfeiting regular silver eagles.
Yeah.
So maybe they're getting ready. Maybe they're refining their art and getting ready for a big move. I mean, you know, if it goes up four times, it's only $50.
Yeah. Well, it can happen. I mean, it is done. There's no question about it. And you know, how much is it? I'm counterfeiting silver for a bullion coin is obviously worth it. I mean, if you could do it for $4 and sell for 16, you're obviously making one heck of a percentage gain. I mean, there's no question about that.
And the counterfeits look just exactly like a Silver Eagle.
Pretty close. I was in Mike Maloney's office. I know we digressed and talked about this off air before we start the show, but you know, I was in his office in Santa Monica years ago, and someone gave me, one of the guys that works for him came in with two eagles and threw them down and said, which one's counterfeit? And upon visual inspection, it was pretty hard to tell. The counterfeit wasn't quite as well done or struck as well, but I wasn't certain. But I just, as I did off air, I just put them on the table and listened, and that gave it away very easily. And I told him which one was the silver one.
But and that's a silver coin because of the sound of it. Let's talk about, you know, last thing. Let's just talk about the cryptization of precious metals, because a lot of people want to get precious metals because they're manipulated. We all know that. I mean, that's a statement of fact. It used to be a tinfoil hat. Is it manipulated? No, they pled guilty to charges. They just perp walked another six big bankers at some of the big banks. Yes, they manipulated. They pled guilty to it. So let's get that out of the way. It happens. There's no question about it, please. Everybody said that for years. Gatta said that for years, and they're like, oh, tinfoil hats. Well, okay. Okay, so we know it's manipulated. And it's manipulated because of the markets, and thus what people are trying to do is get away from COMEX. People call it CRIMEX, and the LBMA. They're trying to get away from that because it's totally fraudulent. What about the new markets in cryptocurrencies? And I want to get into the yuan, the oil-backed and gold-backed yuan, all that coming up. I think it's March 26th. I want to get into that too. But let's start with the cryptization of gold and silver coins. Is that coming? That is in the pipe. Right?
Yes, I do not know them all. I've looked at the crypto space, and we've been writing about the crypto space now in the Morgan Report every month for several months. But I do not know all of them. There's several that are backed by gold, and there are some that are backed by silver. And so this, I think, is the next phase of the cryptocurrency world, which means that a lot of these in the first phase were basically unbacked. And white papers basically said there's nothing to this but buy it anyway type of thing. So a lot of those have gone to zero, and they're really not worth the time of day as far as I'm personally concerned. And so the next phase was trust. Trust is always the issue in a monetary system, always has been and always will be. So now if you tie the crypto to something trusted for, you know, again, thousands of years like gold or silver, now you have trust in the equation. But there's still that trust factor. It's like, well, we say it's backed by gold. Is it really? And how can you verify it? So there's that issue. And I, you know, openly admit that. But that's the next phase. And this is something I think will take the cryptocurrency up to the next level. But time will determine whether I'm correct or not.
But will that also break free of the LBMA and the CRIMEX? Will we break free of those markets?
In theory, it could. Certainly, if it's done correctly and the blockchain functions as it can, which means everything is verified and there's really no wiggle room. In other words, it's a contract that's locked in. Then you'll see the possibility of where, let's say, a mining concern uses the blockchain to put metal out to whomever on the blockchain. And then there's people that buy it directly. Without any, you know, LBMA or CME type of intermediary.
And they'll take delivery. They'll say, okay, I want to cash in my silver, you know, silver XYZ, you know, bit silver coin, and I want the silver. And they'll say, sure thing, you send us that coin, and here's our wallet, and here's our address, and we will ship the silver to you. Is that what you're telling me is going to happen?
Absolutely. And then it goes beyond that. It could go to where it goes to commercial bars. So in other words, let's say there's a lot of these better producing silver mines and gold mines pour what's called doré, which is basically a crude form of precious metal. And then that goes to a refiner, and it's refined to 999 fine. And then that goes to a warehouse somewhere or direct ship to Mitsubishi or Apple or, you know, whomever. So with this cryptographic methodology, you could set it up where, let's say, XYZ Mining, that's a major silver producer, goes on the blockchain and they go to a refiner, and the refiner puts it into LBMA quality format, and that goes directly again to Mitsubishi or whomever without, again, any LBMA or CME intermediaries whatsoever. So this is a possibility that I think will gain traction over time. Moving down from the commercial level to the retail level, as you said, Greg, it's a way for people to use their silver or gold as money in a transaction, peer-to-peer or peer-to, you know, business-to-business or business-to-individual or individual-to-business. And this will gain more and more traction, I believe. The problem is some people are so hung up on what a cryptocurrency is, they can't, well, let's say they're having a difficult time, this is my opinion, understanding that a silver or gold-backed crypto coin is not going to take off like a Bitcoin as far as the value. It is going to be tied to the metal itself, but it makes the usability a lot more pervasive, because so many of the 30-year-olds and younger are in this space already. And once they're able to exchange freely the same way that you can with any cryptocurrency, I think it will gain traction.
It'll gain traction, and it'll probably make the price go up. Would you care to hazard a wager on what where the price will be at the end of the year on gold and silver? Would you care to just tell us, do you think it'll go higher or lower? It'll be flat? What do you think?
No, I think it'll be higher. I think that this year will be a fairly good year. I know I said that last year. I was right and wrong. Gold was up about 11% for the year, which is about what I expected. I didn't expect that silver would go flat. In other words, silver basically didn't move year over year last year. This year, I did a survey very early on Twitter. I asked the community, you know, how many thought that silver would outperform gold in 2018, and it was 75% said silver would outperform gold in 2018. I believe that's true. So if you look at the bottom of, let's say, you know, $16, $17, and you take a 30% move, you're looking at, you know, $3-4. So you could add, you know, you see silver 20, 21 this year, maybe 22. I don't know. But I don't expect much more than that. What I do know is technical work. And once gold gets above 1550 and it's confirmed by silver, and it's a broader band, but once silver is in the 22 to 25 range and gold's at 1550, you will start to see an acceleration in the market.
You think the 20s and the 15s for gold and silver?
No, I think for gold, you're going to see the 1400 level or higher, 1450 maybe, and silver possibly into the 20s. They may finish year at 1950. I don't know. Silver's more volatile. Depends if there's any interest. There's so little interest. I mean, as Greg said and many of your other guests, it's really unloved. It's unliked. No one wants it. It's sentiment bottom. The commitment of traders has never looked better, and yet there's low interest in it. So there's an adage in the commodities market, Greg. It says never sell a quiet market. And this is where we're at, the silver market. Never sell a quiet market. So you want to buy now when no one wants it. I want to digress back. You know, when silver was at $5 or less in the late 90s and early 2000s, you know, I started the website and no one was interested in buying a commodity that on an inflation adjusted basis was the lowest it had ever been in all of recorded history. That's called a low. But the people that did buy at the low were Warren Buffett, 129.7 million ounces of 999 point physical silver. He didn't get it all. He got about 90 million of it, and the 40 million took a few years to get that finished. George Soros, I'm no fan of. I'll put that on the public record, but he was involved heavily with Apex Mining, which is basically a zinc mine, not a silver mine, but that would be a silver mine. And even Bill Gates, through one of his money managers, was taking a pretty good whack out of Pan American Silver, which is one of the stalwarts in the silver producing community. In fact, its mission statement is to be the world's largest primary silver producer. So the billionaires were interested in the silver market. When it was quiet.
What did I say? I want to talk about nationalization of mines. This has come up a couple of times that people talk about nationalization, and we don't make that much silver in America. You were telling me something I did not know. You said in the pre-interview that, we don't make that much silver. We have to buy it outside the country.
Well, what we talked about was the mandate when the strategic stockpile was just sitting there, and some of the senator type Congress critters thought this just-in-time inventory is magic and you can never run out of anything. So they saw the silver and they wrote this piece of legislation that said you're going to make this silver liberty, and we're going to take that strategic stockpile and we're going to mint it at the mint and turn them into these coins. So that's what happened. So at the time that that law was enacted, it had to be domestic silver. All the silver that went in those coins came from the silver stockpile or mined out of the United States. Well, as the Eagle program, as that program became more and more popular, more and more people started buying, especially after the 2008 crisis, where it really took off. The ability to get enough domestic silver to fill the program couldn't happen. They didn't have enough mined domestically to make it work. So they had to change the law to take any silver, basically, to mint enough silver eagles to fulfill the demand. So that, I forget how many years ago that took place, but several. And that's that. I mean,
and we still don't mine that much silver, though. You were telling me that United States.
No, we don't. No. Most of the silver on a country basis is China, Mexico, Peru. It's not the United States.
And what about nationalization of mines? Even in the United States, that has come up a couple of times. And if we get into a big spot and we go back to some type of backing with the dollar, with gold or whatever, or at least a percentage of it, that the mines could be nationalized. And you did a survey of the miners, and what was your thoughts on that? What do they tell you when you just recently had a big conference and you were asking the miners, are you fearful of nationalization? American miners outside the country, other miners outside the country, miners inside the country. You talked about nationalization. What was your read on when you asked them about the fear of nationalization of the mines?
Well, first of all, it has happened in the past, so that's a fact, which means it's a possibility in the future. Today, with the NAFTA laws and everything that's in place, with this kind of this world court almost, with the globalization that's taking place before our eyes, I doubt it will take place. It could, certainly under dire circumstances. I mean, look at Venezuela trying to go to like an oil-backed crypto. So it could. What the response was almost to a man or a woman of the people that I had a discussion on this is that no, it won't happen. That, the legal system is too strong, and that the fact is that most of these jurisdictions such as Canada, which is a major one that's mining outside of Canada's ground and in Mexico and Peru and Chile and what have you, most of the workforce is actually the locals. I mean, yes, there are some management that are Canadian or whatever nationality. So really, it's a situation where it could happen. It depends. It would be based, in my view, more on a monetary crisis where, yep, this is needed for, transactions. And that happened probably more on the gold side than the silver side. I really have been on record many times of saying I really doubt the silver will come back into the monetary system. I think the greatest possibility of that taking place will only come from the bottom up, not the top down, which means like this link that you're going to put up for me, and thank you for that. With this load program, this mother load takeoff is about remonetizing the silver, remonetizing silver in the cryptographic space. And, just imagine that there's 100 million ounces that are committed to this project. I mean, that's significant. And if there's more and more transactions done on that platform and it starts to grow, I mean, basically it would be a situation where, we the people would be determining the price of silver because it's used in commerce, which it hasn't been really for a very, very long time.
I will put that load program up. You talked about the cryptization of the currency, and people can actually deposit their own silver and then draw off it like a prepaid credit card. Is that how that would work?
Yeah, well, first of all, I want to be very clear. First of all, if you get in early, you're committing silver, and there's no guarantee you're going to get it all back. Now, they have I want everyone to look at the website and go through the frequently asked questions and all that. I'm promoting because I believe in it, and I have silver at risk, and I'm not saying anyone should. What I am saying is that you should do a small amount, like I teach in the 10 Rules of Silver Investing, if you're so inclined. The reason I like it is there's a lot of people out there that are really, upset at the silver market, which is... and so it gives you an opportunity, but not a guarantee, to take some of that silver that's just sitting there that you're really not happy with its price performance and commit it And then if you do that, that risk also has another side, which is called a reward, which means once this is up and running, which it is not at this time, but once it is, then you could actually gain physical silver as a token that can be exchanged for physical silver. So you could actually earn interest in silver on your commitment.
But again, how many ounces is a small amount? 10 ounces, 100 ounces? What would you
do? I think the minimum is, I'm not certain. You have to look at the website. I think the minimum is 100 ounces.
Okay. All right.
So that's not for everybody, and I know that, but a lot of people are enthralled with this idea because it's the only program that I'm aware of that you could commit physical and get a physical back.
Okay, David Morgan, the Morgan Report. Of course, you have a subscription service. You have some free stuff on the Morgan Report, themorganreport.com. You also have a great subscription service. You're a prolific writer. I really appreciate you coming on. Your books are on the site, Second Chance, which talks about, hey, you could get a big second chance, a big wave, a next big wave up, and also the Silver Manifesto book on the site. David Morgan, thanks for joining us today on USAWatchdog.com.
Greg, it was great having a chat with you. Thank you.
This is the Morgan Report with David Morgan. For the latest in precious metals investing, gold, silver, the economy, and more, go to themorganreport.com.